Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Prohibited Payroll Deductions Edition. Today our featured guest is Pacific Legal Foundation staff attorney Timothy Sandifer, discussing ESURSA v. Pocatello Education Association, heard an oral argument on Monday, November 3rd. Thanks for tuning in. The Supreme Court here considers the application of the First Amendment to payroll deductions. The case arises from a challenge to the Idaho Voluntary Contributions Act of 2003, which attempted to constrain the participation of labor organizations in political activities. Public employee labor organizations sued state officials in federal district court, claiming several provisions of the act violated their First and Fourteenth Amendment rights. The state conceded the unconstitutionality of all the challenged provisions except the one prohibiting payroll deductions for political activities. The district court found this provision constitutional as applied to the state government, but unconstitutional as applied to county and local governments. The state appealed this latter ruling, but the Ninth Circuit affirmed it, applying strict scrutiny on the grounds that local governments were not state-controlled non-public fora, and reasoning that the challenged provision would unconstitutionally burden political speech. The Supreme Court now considers whether the First Amendment prohibits a state legislature from removing its political subdivision's authority to make payroll deductions for political purposes. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Sandifer.
ESURSA versus Pocatello Board of Education is only the most recent of the many cases involving subsidies for labor union political activity. These subsidies take the form of laws that allow unions to deduct money directly from the paychecks of workers, even workers who choose not to join the union. These deductions give unions a unique advantage enjoyed by no other political organization. And so the unions have ferociously opposed any attempt to limit, revoke, or even examine this privilege. To understand how it works, it's important to keep clear on some frequently misunderstood aspects of unions. First, unions are today hardly the brave defenders of the working man that their century-old image suggests. Instead, they are wealthy, politically influential corporations, operating with little accountability and governed by a unique body of law that is biased in their favor at the outset. Unions today are the leading exploiters of workers in the American economy. Under a 1977 Supreme Court decision called Abood versus Detroit Board of Education, states are permitted to give unions the power to take union dues directly out of a worker's paycheck. As with the withholding tax, this is an effective way to disguise the actual cost from a person who's required to pay. This would not be such a problem if it were limited to the union's members, but Abood and other cases also allow states to deduct money from workers who have chosen not to join the union. The rationale behind this is called the free rider theory. The idea is that all workers, both members and non-members, benefit from a union's collective bargaining, and so non-members should not be allowed to obtain those benefits without paying union dues. So states may force non-members to contribute to the operating costs of the union. This theory has some serious problems. For one thing, it does not really justify forcing a person to pay for a benefit that he didn't ask for and that he might not value. My neighbor might argue that I benefit from the fact that he has a pretty rose garden, but he still has no right to force me to pay for his gardener. The problem gets worse when we remember that unions spend a great deal of time and money supporting political campaigns and causes, and workers frequently disagree with the political views of the union leadership. A lot of workers vote Republican, but union leaders are overwhelmingly Democratic, and union political activities overwhelmingly support Democrat causes and candidates. In the Abood case, the Supreme Court did say that workers have a First Amendment right not to be forced to contribute to union political activities that they disagree with. They remembered Thomas Jefferson's famous phrase, "To compel a man to furnish contributions of money for the propagation of opinions which he disbelieves is sinful and tyrannical." And in a series of decisions, most notably the 1988 case of Communication Workers versus Beck, the Supreme Court has clarified the fact that unions may not use the money taken from non-members for political purposes, but may only use that money to cover the expenses of collective bargaining activities. Unions responded to these decisions in two ways. First, they resisted implementing fair procedures to protect workers' right to dissent. Many unions refused to inform workers of their rights, or required dissenting workers to demand refunds through a time-consuming and difficult process. Second, they claimed that only a small fraction of each worker's contribution goes to political campaigning. Of course, they resist disclosing their financial information, and the figures they do release are not reliable, so nobody really knows how much money unions spend on political activities. But of course, the unions claim the amount is very small, suspiciously small, so that they can continue deducting 95% or so of the usual dues amount from a worker's paycheck. What's more, unions rely strongly on peer pressure and a vague threat of violence to enforce conformity among workers. Given the fact that a dissenter would not see much of an increase in his take-home pay, but would draw a lot of unwanted attention to himself by objecting, these tactics effectively squelch most dissent among workers who are forced to contribute to union operating expenses. Given the enormous political power of unions, attempts to resolve these problems through legislation have been very halting. In 2007, the Supreme Court heard a case involving a Washington ballot initiative that required unions to ask permission before taking workers' money for political activities. This law changed a law that had formerly required dissenters to demand refunds. And this simple switch had dramatic effect on the income of unions, who relied on intimidation and inertia to keep dissenting workers quiet. So the unions filed a lawsuit, arguing that the Washington law violated their free speech rights. They claimed that requiring them to ask permission imposed a burden on their power of expressing themselves. Of course, respecting the rights of people who disagree really is a burden in the eyes of labor unions. Fortunately, the United States Supreme Court unanimously upheld the law in a case called Davenport versus Washington Education Association. As Justice Scalia observed in that decision, unions have no First Amendment right to money earned by others. The ESRSA case involves a somewhat clumsier law. There, the state of Idaho prohibited local governments from deducting money from their employees' paychecks for political activities, even if the employee requested it. The union sued, arguing that this violates the First Amendment, because other organizations, such as charities, are allowed to deduct from the paychecks of local government employees if the worker requests it. The unions claim that these deduction programs are a kind of public forum, and thus the state may not pick and choose who gets to participate based on political expression. The state argues that the deduction programs aren't a public forum at all. Instead, they argue that the case is more like political expression on government-owned property. Since local governments are creatures of the state has the right to control how they're run, including what sort of paycheck deduction programs they operate. And since the state has a legitimate interest in avoiding the appearance of giving a political favor through paycheck deduction programs, they have the right to prohibit all political deductions. So the basic question in ESRSA is whether the state may draw a line that allows non-political organizations, such as charities, to deduct directly from workers' paychecks, but prohibits those deductions for political organizations. If this is seen as discriminating against a particular viewpoint, then the law will be struck down. During oral argument, some of the justices recognized that, although facially neutral, the law clearly has a powerful effect on unions. Is there any other organization affected? Asked Justice Ginsburg. Isn't it simply union speech that's at stake? What's more, given the fact that the law even prohibits employees from agreeing to have their money taken from their paychecks, it seems likely that the justices will see this as a law that prohibits individuals from expressing themselves, rather than as a law designed to preserve the state's own apparent neutrality. At oral argument, the justices tried out various ways of analyzing the case, focusing largely on what degree of control the state has over local governments. If the state controls local governments completely, the justices seemed to believe that the state would be constitutionally free to restrict the use of those funds to prevent the state from being entangled in political activities. But if the local governments are seen as more autonomous, then state intervention in their payroll systems would be treated with greater skepticism, since it would indicate that the state was differentiating between people on the basis of their expressive activities. After all, the state would probably not be free to control a private employer in this way. The complications over how to view the case were nicely summed up by a question Justice Ginsburg asked during the oral argument. We have two important concessions, she told the union's attorney. You don't question the constitutionality of the ban as to state employees, and the other side doesn't question that it is unconstitutional as to private employees. So here we have state-local employees. Do we bracket them with state employees or with private employees? Whatever the ultimate decision in ESRSA, it will probably do little to fix a body of law that is dominated by political motivation and manipulation. many judges have an obsolete vision of labor unions as defenders of the working class against oppressive employers, when the reality is far more complicated. Unions are independent business enterprises with enormous political influence and little responsibility to the workers they supposedly represent. They are given special legal exemptions and privileges, including what is basically the power to tax people directly. Such benefits would never be accorded to any other kind of industrial conglomerate. And the attempts to rationalize these special benefits in the union context lead increasingly to complicated and strained interpretations of the law. One possible solution becomes clear immediately. The courts should declare that the First Amendment requires unions always to ask permission from workers before deducting money from their paychecks. After all, the due process cases have long held that when government is going to take away people's money or property, it must give them a hearing before doing so, whenever possible. And given the serious First Amendment violation that occurs when a worker is pressured into contributing for a cause he disagrees with, a rule requiring consent before deduction would serve as a useful prophylactic against the deprivation of constitutional rights. The justices have often said that courts should not, quote, presume acquiescence in the loss of fundamental rights, end quote. But until unions are required as a constitutional matter to ask permission before taking away workers' earnings, the abuses of both workers and the political system will continue. At the Pacific Legal Foundation, I'm Tim Sandifer.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.